episode 77 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 17th, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my leprechaun hunting brother, James Furlough.
That's right, I am. And yes. I will admit that I did not wear green, and I almost punched two people who tried to pinch me, which is why I don't wear green.
It's weird that we both have the same rule. Because I don't feel like this is one of those like our like weird brother connection. We've never talked about this, but this might actually be the first time we've ever talked about this. But if you punch me or if you pinch me, I punch you. Like, and I don't wear green. And everybody's always like, "You can't punch me." Yeah, exactly. Everybody's like, "You can't punch me. I pinched you, and you're not wearing green." I was like, "I'm not punching you because it's St. Patrick's Day." See, this is the Irish in us coming out. St. Patrick's Day, it's white. but yeah, it's a good week. Did you do anything special for the celebration of the day after St. Orhor's Day?
You know, I've been preoccupied by one and only one thing all week.
The podcast.
Yeah, very closely related to the podcast. Yes, actually.
Nice. What's that?
How I prepare for the podcast.
Oh, now, dude,
has been weighing heavily on my soul.
Yeah. Well, we will talk about that at length. As we talk about all sorts of stuff, because this week, like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show and we talk about Google Reader, James has got a short disclosure.
What is it? I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is good. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we have a couple of social media connections. I am on Twitter at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. And the show is at Furlough Bros. You can also go to furloughbros.com. That's a good website. We've got all sorts of fun stuff there, like a really cool logo and interesting fonts and color schemes, things of that sort. Also, there's some articles. And, so go check it out.
You can subscribe to our RSS feed. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, that's right. Hurts a lot. Thanks,
ouch.
Google. If you do that. And usually at this point in the episode, we say, you know, if you like this show, we'd appreciate you sharing it with your friends. That always helps. Word of mouth is the most powerful tool out there. But I'm reading a book that says that's wrong. We've got to do other stuff. It's called Contagious. And when I... Well, they don't say it's wrong. They just don't say it. They say it's not very respond to that. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for not doing that. This book is claiming that you don't. I'm just saying. But I'm actually – it's interesting. It's about like why things go viral. But hopefully I will use what I learn in order to make this show the most popular show in America. It's my goal. It's my
– All right.
It's going to happen. Anyways.
Hey, so, you know what? Bill Gates had a crazy goal and he was able to do it. So we can have crazy goals too.
Exactly. That's right. We're the next Steve Gates.
We're next to that guy.
Wow. Anyways. So what's going on this week?
We'll start off with the smaller stories, okay?
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I will admit, I probably spent just as much time thinking about this as I did thinking about Google Reader.
All right.
Which is the City Day Sims.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you do the run-up into it since you posted the article first.
All right, thank you. The SimCity, we talked about it a little bit last week, mentioned it briefly, I think. The new one came out.
Briefly, real briefly. We just mentioned it.
It's number one, it is a very fun game. We've played it, and all the naysayers out there that are complaining about DRM, don't buy the game. Nobody cares. Nobody likes you
okay.
anyways.
It's all right.
I don't know why everybody has to get so bent out of shape. goodness gracious, people like to complain. Anyways,
one and stay off that, of North America West 3.
Yes, seriously.
You're at it.
Please. There's still room. Within the SimCity universe, we were told that one of the reasons why it requires the always-on internet connection is because they do all sorts of fancy juggling behind the scenes on the servers. They do more than just saving your game file and managing your friends. No, they do complex calculations, which everybody was like, why? It seems like it'd be pretty easy to put that sort of stuff on the computer. and they came back, were like, no. It's, you don't understand how cool it is. It's like the coolest thing that's ever been thought of, and we made it wonderful. Well, people, like, in the first couple of days had gotten source code chunks, and there's just a huge amount of JavaScript and stuff, and people were actually pretty impressed, like, on the first pass, like, oh, it looks nice. And then this one dude got a developer's version of the game, mm-hmm. and it turns out it has a little switch where you can turn off the internet connection. Game runs fine. There's nothing. It just keeps running. And then when you turn the internet connection back on in settings, because in the developer's edition it's a settings thing, it'll automatically save your city. so he can play offline. And he's like, yeah, so the game is definitely online capable, which of course has let everybody.
So it only, so just to make offline. Sure I understand that right, it only saves the game, or you have to be online to save the game.
Yes.
But you don't necessarily have to be online to play the game.
Not at all, yeah. So it's the servers aren't doing anything, as far as we can tell, other than connecting you to other...
It's managing the global market to make sure those prices actually change, which they haven't.
Yeah. At all. Is that what they say it's all about?
Well, they claim that the global market prices that we sell for is all going to be based off of supply and demand. And so, theoretically, they should fluctuate, which is why they say... You know, if you don't just sell oil, also sell plastic and fuel to balance out shifts in your sales prices because, you know, one of them may not always be the cheapest based off of the supply and demand going on in the game. So, you know, of other cities buying and other cities selling, theoretically, I've been playing it for a few hours and have not noticed a price shift at all.
Yeah, and the game moves fast enough. You'd think that's something that you'd want to at least fluctuate. Maybe not big swings, but at least small swings on a relatively regular basis.
I could see on a monthly report, and, you know, give me graphs too, because that could be really interesting in another layer of the game where you're, like, trying to figure out the futures of literally of raw goods. And have it just on a daily, maybe not daily, okay. It could be a game daily basis. It, you know, in terms, you know, it does like every 24 hours, which I guess is a month. I haven't figured out why they do that. The game plays every 24 hours, but they call it a month, not a day, which I'm like, why? Just call it a day. It's all right.
I'm totally confused by the 24 hours in a month. Thing.
24 hours in a month. Yeah, that's how it works. Or you just like, just give me, it's 30 days.
Well, what I like about it is the idea that, you know, is that this is your monthly income report, which is what it's always been. But at the same time, like, they basically, you know, they have like the day and then the evening. We are so far off right now. Let's get back to what it was. We got so much to talk about today. So anyways, one of the big deals about this offline mode is the thought that if somebody builds a cracked version where you can download it, you can borrow it from the internet for free, instead of having to connect to the servers in order to save your game where they will prevent you from playing, you could theoretically at this point build a cracked version that would actually allow you to save the game locally and therefore allow people to pirate it and play a pirated version for free, which is the whole point of making everybody upset in the first place by having always online connectivity for a game that people don't think
you
should.
That's so dumb. I mean, all that means is that on all of the torrents, there's just going to be the dev version. That's it.
Yep. I know. Well, that's exactly.
And someone will figure out how to save it natively, so you don't have to connect to the server.
That's exactly what everybody's saying, and that's what's going to happen. And the other frustrating part about it is, like, we had talked about the idea that because they were claiming that they were doing other stuff on the background, like other calculation parts, the idea was that really made it easy to develop other platforms because you could build a very lightweight version of the game for like the iPad that would run the same thing, because all the heavy lifting of trying to figure out what your like Sims are doing and stuff is all done server side, is what they were like implying, and it turns out that's not true at all. So it's like, I don't know. It's sort of, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Once again, if you don't like the policy, don't buy the game and then be quiet. It is from a strategy perspective from a company. Like, I just don't think it's a great strategy. I don't know. I mean,
It's weird. There's definitely some, not 100% of the truth is being told with us, which is annoying.
Call
it what it is, EA. It's okay. It's, people who like it are going to like it.
Yeah. And I feel like people, I feel like if they had just come out and said, we're doing this as an anti-piracy thing, and we think it also improves gameplay, which is basically what they said. I don't know. I mean, their problem was the story got away from them because they wanted to make it, because everybody's like, so what advantages does it give them? And they were like, I want to say it allows you to do cool things. And, you know, like, thanks, EA.
It's probably something cool ridiculous. Things. Like, when it started, it made sense to make it on the server. And then all of a sudden, they realized that we live in 2013 and all of our computers can actually run the algorithms just fine.
Yeah.
And that the heavy lifting is the graphics, which has always been, and you can't do that over a server. And so they were like, we could just put this on the machines. It actually would run better doing it that way. Just thought you guys should know that. So, the other things that I read about is just there's some glass box wonkiness going on, specifically with the populations and traffic and stuff, where they just haven't quite got their. It sounds like this will improve over time, but like one example is like a sim does not. It doesn't live in the same place. It doesn't have like a home and a job. It literally be like, okay, it's time for the sim to go home. It will go to the next available home. And if it's time to go to a job, it will go to the next available job.
Wait a second. I've heard people complaining about this, but my first thought on that was, yeah, that is kind of weird. And then I started thinking about it and thinking, you know, I realize this isn't true for everybody, but I think one of, you know, there are some weird parts of it, like, you know, you could one day suddenly have your power plant, powered by complete morons, and if you have a nuclear power plant, that becomes a very big problem very quickly. But the reality of it is, your population flows. They live in different places.
Fine, Mr. Smarty Pants. I don't think it flows that much. Month is a year, and so therefore,
And you can build an entire skyscraper in 4 hours. I mean, come on,
that part of the game.
that doesn't cause me frustration. But it's once again, game is all about
the point that I was getting to.
Okay.
It was the promise of a complex system that my goal was to optimize. Just like it was a promise of it's so complex that it has to be run on servers. Come to find out, no, it's not. It's fairly simplistic in the way that it's all done. And that's the annoying part. Which, again, I'm totally okay with saying, hey, look, it's a simulation. It would be ridiculous to try to mimic the real world. Yeah, there are certain simplifications that had to be made. We put priorities on water and electricity and not as much on the, you know, population part in terms of how it works. If you know that apparently the numbers are also kind of wonky, I'm okay with that. They try to cover this stuff up, and they tried honestly to make the game seem cooler or more complicated perhaps than what it actually is. But the game is genuinely fun. So they should have come out and said, hey, look, we get it. This isn't the most complex thing ever, but it's ridiculously fun. So enjoy.
Right. And the other thing is, I mean, there's a part of it that's like, I actually think that people are like, I'll be totally honest. I actually think that's unfair. I think that the game is unbelievably complex compared to the other ones. Like, it actually, like, Sims have to deal with stuff. And one of the things is, and this is all about, like, they're building strategies, like, or they're building systems that require different strategies. It's like, you don't want stupid idiots to power your power plant and melt down your entire city. Well, then
which
have a smarter
happen,
population.
Which is kinda cool.
No, that's, yeah, it's actually happening in one of my cities right now. My power plant is off because
it's actually
happening.
Not cool.
Yeah, it's
wait,
really annoying.
In our shared region, you're
no, the other one.
Okay, good.
I just turned it off because I don't know how to prevent it from melting down. I think I just have to destroy it, but right now it's not doing anything, so that's fine. But
off.
Yeah, and I already was producing so much oil that I turned on, I built an oil power plant, and now I got plenty of power.
Boom.
But, what I think is interesting about it is, like, it requires a completely different strategy in how you educate your populace, because what it basically does is it basically says you need a smart population, which is true. You know, if you're going to build – this is going to be off. If you're going to build a nuclear power plant in the middle of Stockton, like, expect it to melt down, because you're just talking build it in the middle of –
Wait. Isn't Stockton where you went to get your higher education? I don't understand.
Yes. Well,
so
I'm
what are
just
you saying,
I know a lot of stupid people from there. my professors were rarities. They were diamonds in the rough. Is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But you know, but I mean, the simple truth is that Stockton has a low education level, whereas like Los Alamos, for example, has an unbelievably high education level. And so you're I don't know. I just sit there and I shrug my shoulders and I say, yeah, it's not perfectly realistic, but it's actually, it's relatively realistic and it's super complex if you compare it to the other Sim cities.
Yeah. I'm with you. And I hope that they do free automatic updates that improve the complexity over time.
Yeah.
You know, along with a warning, hey, P.S., this is really going to mess with some of your cities.
Yeah.
You know, just so you know, the trick isn't going to work anymore.
But that's so common in games nowadays. I mean, that's like part of the fun of a game is trying to figure out the rules that the developers built into the game so that you can, you know, so you can optimize based on rules that they didn't tell you existed.
So you can game it.
Right. And yeah, exactly, and that's what they did. This is so ridiculous.
That's okay.
I feel
all right.
This is
I'm with you. You've convinced me.
But my bigger thought on the industry on all of this is that there is such a impetus to dislike EA that it's like, generally speaking, like these aren't problems or they're actual like game designs. Which yeah, fine, you disagree with, but it's like seriously, like why I don't. Oh gosh, I don't understand. Why everybody is so bent out of shape on this. Like, man, we are so friggin' finicky. Like, just anything goes wrong and gamers freak out. Like, it's not perfect. Yeah, it's not perfect. But for games that you love, you'll put up with it because, you know, whatever. Ugh. Anyways.
I'm with
you.
Let's
talk about something else. I'm angry.
All right, all right.
What do you want to talk about?
Here's some good news. Here's motivation for you, okay?
Yeah.
Because I know you've kind of been in the just go to the page. Because I know that you've been a little bit on this kick, okay? So this is just going to fuel the fire for you in a good way. You remember a few weeks back I was talking about an app called Mailbox?
Yes.
Where you had that wait list and you had to get in and stuff like that. It was just a better way, I guess, of handling Gmail, even though there's some things that they should really fix, like server-side search would be really nice.
Yeah.
Do that one sooner rather than later. So they've been out for a month now. So I guess it was probably 4 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago since we talked about it. And they were just recently bought by Dropbox for a cool $100 million.
What? Oh, my gosh.
We need to build an app.
Absurd. Okay, I got it. I have one. I'm not going to say it on the show because I'm actually, like, started to work on it. You're going to like it, though.
I mean, it's not like – it's not Instagram, $1 billion with a B dollars.
Yeah, but still, you're not going to – watch the rest of your life if you don't want to. I mean,
wait, say that one more time.
Not going to work a whole lot for the rest of your life if you don't want to with that kind of money.
Yeah, I'm just jealous.
That wait list was a brilliant idea.
I'm on another wait list for a calendar app right now because someone was like, it's amazing. That one is not nearly as fast. I started at like here. I've literally been on this wait list for over a week, okay?
Yeah.
When I started, I think I was around like 32,000, okay? A week later, I'm down to 10,000.
Oh, wow.
I'm just like, come on, guys. Just let me in. Let me try it. The best part is there was another calendaring app which purports to do very similar things, which we talked about on the show, Sunrise, which there was no wait list, and it's working just fine. But, you know, calendars are important enough. I want to try – since I was in the trying out a bunch of different calendars, I was like, all right, fine. I'll try this one. Like 2 weeks later, apparently. Ridiculous. But yeah, mailbox. They okay, let's just be clear here. They don't handle the email. Google does that.
Yeah.
They don't handle the tags. They don't handle your contacts. They don't handle that. They literally are an IMAP client for Gmail. We'll even back this up a step. They don't do Exchange. They don't do Yahoo. They don't do Outlook. It's just one. Now, yes, you can connect multiple accounts, multiple Gmail accounts to it.
Yeah.
It's literally an iOS only. Let me be more clear about this. It is iPhone only.
Yeah.
Like window dressing, which, don't get me wrong, I like it. I use it. I enjoy it. It's also free. There's no ads. $100 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've been available for a month. I think it took them a couple years to actually make it, and they had a couple other product flops before they got to it. So, you know, it's not like they're overnight.
Honestly, I think the smartest thing they did was the waitlist. I mean, you got a cool product, was a good idea, but the waitlist is it's the idea that nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. You know, they basically faked the you know, excitement and demand. Man, that is like, it's, you know, honestly, like, some of the biggest clubs that you go to, the most hopping clubs where they make tons of money and they get all the, you know, pretty people, the biggest thing that they do is they stop people at the door, so there's always a line. For whatever reason, people want what they can't have, you know, and having a line, gosh, that is so, you know, especially if you can get a little bit of a buzz, a little bit of excitement, and you can get a couple of tech blogs talking about it. Oh, there's a line over there. And all of a sudden, everybody shows up, and the line gets longer and longer and longer
So I'm with you there. In terms of the speed, perhaps.
Yeah. But
more fundamentally, what they did was they picked a very popular pain point, and they focused very narrowly on just fixing that. Like I said, and there's certain things about it that is missing, which is annoying, like server-side search, which anytime I have to search, I go to Apple's original app to do it.
Right.
Because there's literally just doesn't. And, you know, so things like that. But what they did was they picked this one pain point, which is people with really long inboxes that it's just hard to get through, and they figured out an easy way to sift and sort through all those. And so they, you know, they identified this need and then just focused just laser-like on this product. And so when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, okay, what is a need that people have where you can just do this one thing really well that's just a pain point? Apparently, Instagram was one of those as well. It's hard to share photos with friends or put filters on them or something. I don't know.
See, that's my thing. That's my thing. And honestly, this is the tough part, is that sometimes these apps take off and they're not that brilliant. I mean, they're really not.
I think with Instagram, they became popular because it's fun, and Facebook brought them out of fear. Whereas I think Dropbox was more of a, no, this is actually really cool. We're not necessarily intimidated by you. I'm not even sure how they plan on integrating them, if they do at all, other than they were just like, no, we think this could be this could be pretty cool, which I actually wouldn't be surprised to see Mailbox come out with a freemium model now, because that's how Dropbox works.
Right, and Dropbox is pretty, I mean, they've
got server-side search? Buck a month, don't worry about it.
Right. And Dropbox has gotten very good at what they do, and now they're starting to act like Google and Facebook in that they've got a lot of server space, and they're wondering what to do with it. You know, so they're looking to expand they're looking to maximize the effectiveness of the capital expenses they've already made, because, you know, storage is cheap and they want to be able to use it. So, not the amount of storage they have. That's not cheap. So they've paid a lot of money and they want to know how to use it. And I think I think you're going to start to continue to see Google Dropbox do that more and more, either, you know, buying other companies and just expanding their portfolio. Because the truth is that all of a sudden somebody, you know, right now they are the predominant, you know, sharing system, but that doesn't mean that Google and Apple won't suddenly decide to really take them on with a similar product and a gigantic marketing campaign and just, you know, beat the snot out of Dropbox.
Yeah, maybe, perhaps. Maybe. You know, Dropbox has some, you know, they've talked about some of this stuff. I mean, that was part of what they were like, Drive, that's going to kill Dropbox. And it didn't, which is okay.
Well, yeah, but it's not really Dropbox. That's the thing. I mean, it's not a folder on your computer that just does, you know.
Well, Drive is now. You literally can download an extension just like Dropbox and drag files in and out just like normal.
I've had that Drive folder forever. I didn't realize you could put anything in it.
Yeah, which is nice. And then you can view it online and stuff. So, I mean, so it has it, but they just, like I said, it can do it and it just hasn't taken off. But anyways, congratulations, Mailbox team. You win by $100 million.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anyways, so what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to get angry or do you want to talk about Samsung?
You know, let's just get this out of the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Google made an announcement. Or do you want to – sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were about to – you'd go.
I was doing the dramatic pause mostly so I knew where to cut the podcast.
Oops.
No, it's okay. It's all right. Because this will be its own section. So Google made a and they've been doing this since spring cleaning. This is their second year doing it. And so they announced recently that they're going to stop supporting a bunch of things. Some examples there. They're going to cut off Apple Script, some CalDev API support, Google Building Maker, Google Cloud Connect, Google Reader, Google Voice Apps for BlackBerry. Search it. Wait a second. They're going to kill Google Reader.
Yeah.
And they literally buried that in the middle of a huge bullet list of stuff.
Services that nobody really cares about that much.
Yeah.
And they're one of their most popular services in their entire ecosystem.
So from what I understand, from a sheer number standpoint, it's not like one of the most popular, but it's one of the most used by people.
Yeah,
it
doesn't have a gigantic number of people behind it, but yeah, the actual like resonance time on it is insane. Like the amount of time that people will just hang out on that page it's absurd. Like it gets numbers that everybody drools for. Like Facebook doesn't even scratch the surface of what Reddit has a hard time believing how much resonance time people spend on Google Reader. It's absurd how effective of a product it is. And they decided to close it down.
Here's what I would like to do. Okay, I want you to open up Google Reader.
Okay.
Well, you still can.
I know.
July 1st, by the way, in case you missed that. If you open it up,
yes.
Go to the little sprocket and go to Reader Settings. Okay.
Okay.
And then go to the Goodies tab. It's going to be the fourth one over.
Yeah.
Is it Goodies? No. What do I want?
Import export.
No. Where did it go? It used to be here. I thought it was in the goodies. Your phone, subscribe to your stuff. Oh, never mind. Go back to Google Reader.
Okay. I don't
know where it is. And under all items.
Okay.
Okay, is trends.
Okay.
Click on that.
All right.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted. So, it should have like a sentence for you, giving you a little summary here.
Yeah.
So I'll read mine first. From your 154 subscriptions, that's how many I have, over the last 30 days,
yeah,
I have read 5,859 items.
Oh, my goodness.
Clicked on 136. I haven't starred any because I don't use it. I use Read Later. And I've emailed 9.
Nice.
And then I'll give you the other little stat once you share yours.
So I have been going crazy with work. So my last 30 days aren't nearly as impressive. From your 17 subscriptions, which part of the problem is I only have 17 subscriptions. Okay. Obviously my number's way lower than yours because I'm already on the defensive. Over the last 30 days, and you've only read 534 articles, clicked on 158. So I've actually clicked on more, but I've read fewer. And
fair enough. That's because you like Mac Daily News here. And they force you to click.
Well, no, I actually click on all of them. I mean, I actually don't like reading stuff in the reader, believe it or not. Because it's kind of like how I manage my workflow when reading stuff. I tend to click out on stuff.
Okay.
What was I going to say? I'm assuming that over time that would have been a higher number, but anyway. Yeah. So, tell me your especially about 157 subscriptions. I can't believe that. That's astounding to me.
Like so on that. I have 154. And I would say. So part of it is like I follow personal blogs and individual stuff. I follow I can say this word. Individual YouTube feeds. So like for example, How It Should Have Ended. I figured out how to parse YouTube's URLs because they don't officially have an RSS feed anymore. And so, but I figured out how to parse the URL so that I can get specific user uploads. So anytime a user uploads it, whether it's unlisted or not, I get both. I can see their upload, which is kind of crazy. And so, like How It Should Have Ended is one of those that I do it. There's some jiu-jitsu ones that I follow, some individual people that I follow. And so I've got like.
So have you gotten any fun unlisted ones that you want to share with us?
No, they're for some of them, what I'll notice is that it's a video that they're putting up that they're going to use on like a blog post. And so they don't want it to be listed right away because they're going to do the blog post later. And so I've seen that.
It's sort of like
James double following there. But so I've got like for 7 or 8 of those are just YouTube channels. So the amount that they update is not very often.
Right.
And then I follow a bunch of personal blogs. I've probably got like 15 or 20 of those of just friends who they may do post an update once a week or once a month maybe. Some of them.
So what are the other 120 subscriptions?
Yeah, well, so I follow I've probably got like here, you know what? There's a way to answer this. Show all. Yeah, I've got I actually have a bunch of Twitter feeds which I guess are all broken now, except for I have one, actually, maybe it's a search that is replies back to me. I have that into my RSS feed. So I guess those are, how many of those? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So I got like 12 of those, which I guess are technically dead. But because it only shows when it's updated, you know, I don't care. I don't delete them because they're just not
right. Clean,
which I might do some cleaning now. In terms of like tech news, I follow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 tech blogs. But some of them are like for sites, like for example, GigaOM. I actually follow 6 individual author feeds because I didn't want the entire thing, but there are certain certain writers were like, I like what you write about. I like your topics. I like your style. I like your skills. So I get those individually. I follow a lot of them will be for like product sites. Like for example, BankSimple, Cloudflare, Dropbox, HipMonk, Mint, Remember the Milk, things like that. X-Plane.
So basically, what you're saying.
30 of those.
You have a ton.
I follow a bunch of sports stuff, like the NFL Network videos. I follow specific sports teams and all of the game highlights. I have those. This is a big part of my life, which is why this is a big deal. I follow Christian blogs.
What's funny about this is like I follow 3 tech sites that I actually churn through all their articles almost every week: TechCrunch and Gadget, Mac Daily News. Which, like I said, you can tell the last 30 days have been busy for me because that's actually upwards to 1,500 articles a week between just those 3.
Yeah.
And I haven't been quite doing that, so I've really honed my search skills. But you know, one of the things is like I only get about half my articles from Google Readers like links. Mm. Like I spend a lot of time on other venues looking, you know, trying to find that cool story.
See, mine is 99%.
Right.
Comes from, and as you can see, I figured out how to bring it all to me. I mean, here's an even better one. I found this service that you can take an email and have it emailed to the service and it turns it into an RSS feed. And so there are sometimes I get emails, like for example, I subscribe to MLS property listings. And so the way the service works is it emails it to you daily, or anytime a new one pops up, it just emails it to you. And I was like, this is horrible. And so I now have it set up a filter where it automatically forwards it and then deletes the email. And then it forwards it to this other service, which turns it into a feed. And so I just get it in my RSS reader. And so
right.
You know, so that's where I see the emails. I follow. It looks like.
Wait a second.
Finance blogs.
I want to hear this. I know I'm kind of jumping around, but I want to hear your overall number, your big number.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I think I proved the point that this is part of my life.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be horrible. Since October 12th. 2006, which is when I signed up for this.
Okay.
I have read a total of 263,820 items. With currently 5 sitting in my inbox that I haven't read yet.
What? That's absurd. Yeah, see, I don't use it nearly as much as you. Since April 15th, 2008, one I haven't been using as long. You have read a total of 41,663.
Which is still a lot.
Yeah, it's still a tremendous number of articles. That's nuts. That's nuts.
And it's funny. I'm reading, let's see, between 1 and 4 p.m. So during work, and then at like 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I actually, you know, it's funny. You know what I use? You know what I enjoy most? Google Reader I use as a tool, but I have all my comic web comic stuff fed into it. So this is a bigger question. So what's okay?
Which I only do like 2: the Oatmeal and XKCD, which are both in my feed. But
yeah, I've got a couple,
which are both hilarious.
Yeah. Then. I'm a big fan of Cyanide and Happiness. They they're a little rough around the edges, but I like them. So what I was going to say is, I mean, this is a bigger thing, right? Okay, so one of the interesting articles I read was a thing called Why RSS is Important. And this guy's big complaint was, and this is sort of like setting us up for the bigger, you know, question. Well, let's start here. What is Google doing, actually? I don't want to talk about that quite yet. So why did Google do this? And I read a couple of articles, and basically what they said was quite a few times, in the past couple of years, they've actually tried to shut down the Google Reader team and move them into different projects. Like
yeah.
when Buzz came around, they tried to shut down Google Reader and move the team to Buzz.
Oh, I'm glad.
When yeah. When it was some other one, I can't remember what it was. And even when Google Plus first launched, they were like, we're going to shut down Google Reader and move the team into Google Plus. And the Google Reader team was like, please don't do that. We really like our jobs. We like what we're doing. the team was very resistant, and it still was a big enough of a product to hang around and keep doing what they're doing. But Google really, really liked them because they were the only group at Google that Google feels has been really successful social, as they claim it. And what people really found was that they were really sharing articles via Google Reader prior to their changes a few years back.
What a joke! Are you kidding?
So basically what's going on here is what's driving Google crazy is they're saying, on one hand, Google Reader is pulling use out of Google Plus because they want you to use Google Plus for this sort of thing. They want you to
it doesn't work that way.
I know. That's what everybody's saying. And then the other thing is they're saying the Google Reader team is the only one that figured out how to do it. So let's move these guys over there. They're a brilliant team. They're just
yeah,
like,
but
they're
the
super
reason why they figured it out is it's an inbox of articles.
I know. Well, but the thing is it doesn't there. And what they're saying is, and you know, it's like whatever. Google's allowed to do whatever they want to do. But you know, their thing is that it's not a product that helps them move forward. It, like, doesn't give them. You know what are they? They're an advertising company. How do they make money advertising? By giving like really brilliantly targeted ads.
Dude, they could have advertised this up the wazoo, and they didn't, and it kills me.
Well, but the question is
they know exactly what I'm reading. They know exactly what I'm interested in because they know what I'm subscribed to, and they know what I click on, and they can mine that all day long, and they can feed that information across search, across Gmail, across Google+, everywhere. I don't care. They know more about me and what I like than anything else.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
this was a boneheaded move on there, and it's another one too where it's like, I realize not everyone uses it, but I read a bunch of articles, which is good, that there are a whole bunch of other tech people, you know, like who actually like make a living off of their tech blogs who use Google Reader as a part of their job. And so they're just like freak out mode, and which I don't blame them. And I'm just kind of like Google had – they were doing something good for the world. And they were keeping people who liked them. Because I feel like, you know, even if Google did a whole bunch of other stupid stuff and, you know, really messed with them, people at least go, yeah, but there's Google Reader and it's awesome. And these are the people who are writing articles and forming the opinion of the tech world.
That's what's so interesting about this one is that this is like you're attacking the people that spread your message. That's what they've done. Is there, you know, and that to me is the most fascinating part of this entire thing. Is they're messing with you and I. Like, there's plenty of other stuff going on this week, and we want to talk about those other things. But really and truly, no, we're going to talk about this because it affects us directly in how we perform here.
I got to be honest. My initial reaction was our podcast could be done if there's not a viable alternative. Because as you've seen, I live and die on this thing. Which maybe that's my fault for, you know, becoming dependent or whatever.
But what are you supposed to do? It's like there was nobody else out there because Google crushed all the competition.
I've worked under the assumption that it's Google, you know, they support these ideas and that the product is useful and is good, and all they got to do is maintain it. Okay, fine. Apparently, it uses a lot of server space because they cache all these articles and they got to have them ready to go instantly and blah, blah, blah. Fine.
Their biggest problem is that you're not using Google Plus. Well, the thing is if they
but
were
I
add
do.
RSS,
when
I
find a good article, I do share it on Google Plus.
Yeah, and what I wonder with a tool like this is why don't you move it into Google Plus unless it is just a space problem? I mean, you know, which seems absurd since this is, you know, you're talking about a bunch of a text, but
so Owen Malik, who is the founder of GigaOM.
Yeah.
He interviewed Chris Weatherwell. Weather L?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's the creator of Google Reader. He was the guy who kind of got it all going, which is cool. And he was just kind of like, so what do you think about it? And he was saying that very early on, Google management tried to kill the idea before it even got off the ground. And they said, and they decided to continue working on it and to keep trying it and keep pushing it. And he said that from the very beginning, upper management did not like the product for some reason. And so he was like, we always felt like we were on borrowed time. And they even had like a little sign that said like days since cancellation. Because upper management was like, no, we're not going to fund this. And so they went, okay, fine, we'll do it on our free time. We'll make it happen. We think this is an important way to do it. And, you know, and which like even the creators were passionate about this product. And
right.
I just like, there's something there. You've got this passionate, it's a small but passionate user base. And I get it. Google's got a scale issue. HP does the same thing, right? Where we'll have a product idea and we'll run the numbers on it and they'll go, oh, it's only like a $500 million idea. It's not worth our time. You're just like,
yeah.
Okay, that back this absurd. Up a step.
Yeah.
It is worth our time, just so you know. And they're like, no, it's genuinely not. If we can't make $1 billion or more off of it, it's not worth putting a significant amount of time and resources on because it operates at that scale. And,
right.
And Google's in the same boat, which is crazy that they don't make a ton of money off of Android, but yet they're still willing to go forward with it. Which, you know, I guess if you gotta, you know, if you're going to do some money losing products, you know,
yeah.
I'll pick a couple, I suppose. But again, this is one that just was full of rich information. They could have done advertising right in line, right in between my feeds. I do right. not care. I would have been okay with that.
But the problem is what they're doing, and their concern is that there's more than just money resources in all of this. It's the time resources. It's the talent resources. They've got an unbelievably passionate and talented team working on a product that very few people use, and then they have their most passionate users spend all of their time on this. And even though it's a small group, it's like they don't want people spending their time on this. They want people spending their time on Google Plus. Come on, get over.
They do.
As though we are going to go to Google Plus instead of, like, say, I don't know, Facebook for this sort of thing. It's crazy. It blows my mind. And it's like, and the big question is, you know, like, what comes after this? And you know, what comes next? And obviously, like, one of the things is, you know, does it need to be RSS? And like, and I read this one is a really good article from The Verge, and it was titled "Why RSS Still Matters," and you know, the subtitle: "Think Twitter Can Replace RSS? Think Again." And basically,
no,
what this
can't.
Guy got.
I tried.
Yeah. Yes, I know. And basically what this guy got into was like the idea that, yeah, this was a big sorting algorithm. It was a way to manage a torrent of information. But he actually gets into the bigger concept of what an RSS feeder is. And most importantly, the reason why RSS is so important is because it's an open standard. It's Twitter's not an open standard. You can have APIs and stuff, but they've already proven that when things aren't advantageous to their business, they shut them down, which is why, you know, which he sits there and quite eloquently argues you can't rely on that, and so people won't. Whereas, you know, RSS as a format where you put your articles and you build stuff to go forward, and you know, or you build stuff that like outputs an RSS stuff. You know, that's all open, and theoretically anybody can make a reader for it. And you know, and so people. But one of the big ideas here is that, like, because it was this cool way to broadcast new articles, and it was sort of had this, like, it had this very, very fluid format that basically stripped content from format. You know, that's mm-hmm. the beauty of it, right? And because they were doing that, it allowed them to do this brilliant thing, people around the world do this brilliant thing, which all blogs are based off nowadays, which is all blogs are essentially RSS readers. One RSS feed, and that one RSS feed, you know, is built with its own skin and style. That's all a blog is nowadays.
True.
And so they're, you know, and so on one hand, you've got like the fact that it's all, you know, on one hand, you got the fact that it's, you know, you got all these, it's this rich ecosystem and tons of different people use it. And so it's not going to go away because it's, you know, it's not like, oh,
RSS
Google Readers,
won't go away.
You know, RSS won't go. It's not like the guys over at WordPress are going to be like, well, Google Reader's not around anymore, so I guess we'll completely change everything. But the thing is that it's like, it over time, without centralized RSS readers, that will have a corrosive effect on them because people are going to figure out the best way to broadcast this information. And so if somebody else takes over, they will change things. If a non-RSS reader takes over as a format for disseminating information,
well,
like Twitter,
I mean, that's kind of like Twitter and Facebook and now technically Google Plus, they don't do RSS.
Right.
Which is part of what the whole stink is about it.
Right.
It's the whole walled garden thing. Is no, if you want to get the information, you've got to go onto their services, which
right.
is annoying because I used to actually subscribe to a Facebook RSS.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, and it's like funny. I used to subscribe to a Dig RSS. I mean, that was back in the day when I was still on Dig, which was their entire torrent of new articles. That was impossible to keep up with. I think I tried to keep up with it for like a week because it was like – it was like thousands a day, and I don't know what was.
See,
wrong
I think I one. Used to I did top stories for a while.
Yeah,
because that you could actually kind of follow that. But then after a while, I figured out that the ones I actually cared about, I'd already seen on my other feeds.
Right, but I sit there and I go, it's a fascinating little blip in the universe. And I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it's like, you know, man, when Google you're right. Google. What's so weird about this is that it's there's just nobody else. Nobody else is even trying to compete in this space because Google.
So there are. It's just Google owns 90% of the market or used to. I've had people sending me articles on replacements, which is nice about it. I had one. It was 8 Google Reader alternatives that will ease your RSS pain. Feedly is one of them, which I guess in the last 48 hours, they had 500,000 people sign up. And so they were like, hey, we like increased our server space 10x the size, and we're going to be taking your feedback to try to make it better. Because they suddenly realized they got something good out of this. And so
yeah.
Which is one I'll probably be checking out. News Blur is another one. The Old Reader, which literally looks like Google Reader, but from a little while ago. Net Vibes is one. Pulse, which is more like if you have a lot of photo-heavy stuff, that's a good one. Flipboard is one, which Flipboard has officially said that even once Google Reader dies, they will remember your feeds and pull them for you.
Nice.
Which I care about that one because honestly, because I was thinking about this, I probably read at least 50% of my stories using Flipboard on my phone now. But it's connected to the Google Reader API, which means I can jump onto my computer and it is up to date. And you know what I mean? I'm not trying to manage multiple feeds. It's all, which is what was the power about Google Reader, is it had that API. So I could try Flipboard, I could try Feedly or Read Feeder, whatever it is on my phone. I could try these different reading programs and it was just all based off the Google Reader feed.
So I'm kind of like
the first one who has an API that it starts to actually get adopted by some of these other reading services. That's the one that will win.
Did you hear about Dig?
I did hear that Dig is planning on making one, but it doesn't exist yet. And once they make one, I will export all my feeds. I guess first I'll do my own version of spring cleaning.
Yeah, really.
And kind of see if I can't whittle that down to like under 100. I think it's possible. And actually have those written out and have my own document of them. And then and then I'm going to sign up for – I'll probably try 4 or 5 and just kind of see which one I like the most. But Dig said that they're going to work on one. Like I said, Feedly is trying to make one. Or they're trying to really step it up. There was another one in there that made an announcement. But they're like, oh, yeah, we're getting in on it too. I think Zeit might have been it where they like built one in 6 hours. Which you're like, all right, cool. It's not hard. I mean, it's just a – feed parser right. with an unread count. That's the trick, right? Is I don't want the stream, or I don't want the river of information where I only pick up news when I dip my feet in. I want it to wait for me. I want it to build up, and then I want to be able to work through it on my own time.
Right, which is, then that's the thing, is that it, like, that, yeah, I mean, that's the brilliance.
Newest possible, oldest, the newest.
Yeah.
The Flipboard doesn't allow that, which is annoying.
And, well, I actually like it the other way around, but.
That's fine.
Honestly, I mean, that's the reason why I have so few, why I follow so few people on Twitter, is because it doesn't wait for me, and so in order to be able to keep up with everything, I need very few things going on. And, you know, and
so are you saying our show is going to suddenly become like an hour long? So we're like, well, nothing much happened. We missed it all.
Yeah. I mean, like, thankfully, like I said, I get all sorts of articles rolling over the place. So I'm too close.
Yeah. Well, it's, so I am sad.
But still.
I saw another friend, he posted a picture of his, and he had over 300,000, I literally said 300,000 plus articles.
Oh, baby.
I was like, man. And he was another one that was just, he was like, it's part of his life. He just, I don't know. I'm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and it's, yeah, I don't know. It's different. And then that's the thing, is it's like this real tool. Like, you know, if things like Reddit, or where there's just sort of a, like, you know, the stream of information that never stops, it's fun, but, you know, if you use Reddit at all, you realize there are all sorts of inside jokes. And if you stop using it for a day, you come back and you're like, I don't get this inside joke. I can tell it's an inside joke, but I don't get it. And you have to go into the comments and find out what everybody's talking about, because that stream never stops. Whereas this, the stream stopped for you. I mean, and it's crazy. It's just nuts. It's frustrating. Because it
sounds like it will be solved. Marco Armet, who I like, he was the creator of Instapaper and now the creator of the magazine, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
You know, they got his perspective on it because he has Google Reader a plug into his stuff. And he was like, you know what, for the intermediate term, it's going to be horrible and we're all going to hate it. He goes, but in the long term, it'll probably be good because there'll be a bunch of competition and a bunch of innovation that'll happen in the next year or so as people compete to get those eyeballs who are smaller than Google, and, you know, the numbers are actually meaningful. And he goes, and they'll be built for today's social sharing. And then Google will be kicking itself for not thinking of it, but that's okay.
So they get...
Their upper management never, ever saw the value of it, which is just crazy to me. But
mind-blowing.
You know, whatever. I'm sure they have crazy stats where a bunch of people sign up, they start reading their feeds, it gets overwhelming, and they give up.
Yeah.
And that was probably another pain point for people, and Google never figured out how to solve that one. And, you know, which is whatever. It is what it is. So we'll move on. We will embrace change. As I find stuff and as you find stuff, we'll share them with you. And
well, I'm a bit of a procrastinator, so probably January 2nd is going to be a really hard day for me.
July 2nd?
That's what I meant.
Yeah, I'm at least I got Flipboard, which Flipboard was like, don't worry about it. It will still work the next day. You know, so I was like, okay, I just need to – yeah, I figure I was going to wait. I'll probably wait until mid-April before I really start diving into the options. You know, kind of let a couple things shake out first, because I think everyone is still just in freak-out mode.
Yeah.
And
dude, it's going to be like, oh, wait a second. I got to check this out. I can predict the day that all of a sudden I'm going to freak out. And I'll tell you what day it is. It is... because it's July 1st is when it goes, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be June 30th. Because June 30th is a Sunday, which means I'll be doing my last minute show prep, and all of a sudden it's going to click. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. I got to figure this out. it's like by tomorrow.
At the very least, your feeds.
I was going to say, I probably won't have exported my feeds by then. I mean, it'll be like, we'll be in the middle of the show like, James, we have 2 hours before they shut this thing down. I gotta go now.
Yeah, you'd be like, they meant West Coast time, right?
Right, exactly. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, yeah, hopefully you share and find something and I'm like, on a whim, I'll actually do it. But,
which it sounds like if you sign up before they actually shut it down, the import process is pretty seamless because they're just like, yeah, we'll grab your stuff for you and save it.
That's what I've heard with a lot of these, but okay, cool. Well, we'll keep you updated. So, another big thing happened this week. The biggest thing that's ever happened in the tech industry ever.
Ever, huh?
The Samsung Galaxy S4.
How is this the biggest thing ever?
Got announced. I don't know. Everybody's been talking about it like it's the biggest thing ever.
I've only been talking about Google Reader.
you got distracted. The stream suddenly, like, you took a look down the stream and were like, oh no, the stream's going to end. And I just, like, kept riding.
Just kept riding. Yeah. I became paralyzed. Yeah. So, Samsung, huh? What did they do? Samsung. Since I clearly did not pay attention to it at all.
So, Samsung announced that.
Let me put it this way. I wanted to, and then kept getting distracted by Google Reader stories.
Awesome. So, Samsung announced the new flagship phone that will be the follow-up to Kingslayer, the Samsung Galaxy S3, the 3GS as we like to call it on the show. And it's funny how like nobody seems to be like everybody's. I love how everyone's like, so they just called it the 4S. No, it's the S4. Yeah, but they called the iPhone, the last one, the iPhone 4S. And you guys are calling yours the Galaxy S4. Are you guys serious? Like, come on. Come up with your own stuff. But they did come up with their own stuff. They came up with all sorts of cool stuff. And so I want to take this article. So basically this is the long and short of the Samsung Galaxy S4. It's amazing. Yeah. And really boring at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So
how does that work?
I'm not going to give you the so basically what happened. Samsung is going to, you know, they started these like videos and I don't know if y'all saw it, but they had these teaser trailers for it where like there's this little kid who is like he would get these packages of like being able to like. He'd be able to test it ahead of time. Like he was one of the, like the testers. And I don't know, there's these cute little like, whatever commercials, just trying to get people all pumped up. And they had this gigantic presentation. It was ridiculous in some like, Broadway thing. And they had like actors, like superpower actors and stuff. And it's just this gigantic show. And people were basically like, people were asking the question, so did they take a page out of Apple's playbook with the big presentation? And to which a lot of the people that were there responded by, no, they out-Appled Apple, and it was ridiculous. It just got crazy.
Really?
Yeah, and this is the best part. Now, HTC is not necessarily the most unbiased of commenters, but the HTC, the president of HTC, called the announcement an embarrassment. It's really funny. Android and Android violence. They are clearly not pleased by the fact that Samsung is getting as much credit as they're getting for all of this. But their problem was they're like, it wasn't really a tech demonstration of a new piece of hardware. It was like this ridiculous play and some of the acting was terrible. And, it was like, it was crazy. It was clearly put together with like not a tremendous amount of thought, but the music, like they claimed it was really good. I don't know. And the reason why I talk about all this stuff and don't talk about the hardware is because clearly the biggest change from the Samsung Galaxy S3 to the Galaxy S4 has been the marketing strategy.
Oh, really?
And this is one of the things that people have been talking about a little bit, kind of as a general undercurrent on all of this, is the idea that Google, or that, not Google, but Samsung, change their strategy about a year and a half, 2 years ago. They realized that what they really needed to do was to hit the advertising as hard as they could. And what they've found is that it's worked. And HTC has in the past couple of months come forward and basically said, yeah, that's what Samsung beat us on. We've got great phones too, but they're just killing us with advertising. And we thought we could just build better phones and compete on the showroom floor.
Specs speak for themselves. No,
right,
is the
exactly. No, yeah, not at all. People buy stuff because it sounds cool. Like, honestly, like, Apple originally launched two phones, one that was black and one that was white and had more storage space. And people paid more, even though they didn't need the storage space, because they wanted the white case, because they wanted you to know that they're richer than you are. Like, people are ridiculous.
I had a white case. My wife had a black case.
I know, but you had a white on the original one? Or, no, yeah. on the
I don't know if the original one offered it, but for the 3G, well, right. I did.
Yeah, but that was – you actually used it though, didn't you? Or were you just trying to show off?
Oh, yeah. No, I filled the sucker up.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is my girlfriend at the time had a white one and didn't use the space.
Oh,
you know,
what a waste.
And
I find myself now wishing I got the 64 gigs, kind of.
On your current phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what I found is when I record video – that takes up a little bit of space, and I very quickly fill up. Because I got, like, you know, I try to have a little bit of extra space in there, you know, somewhere between 5 and 3 gigs of extra space. And video does that very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas if I had a 64, I feel like I'd be able to do that. Of course, I think I found myself wanting to download. I think it's called Camera Plus or Video Plus. I think it's the one that lets you shoot video, and you can actually go down on the resolution. So
oh,
that
nice.
It, you know, because I'm like, I don't always need it to be 1080p, honestly. I could do the, you know, whatever. I could do the normal stuff and it would be okay.
Right. And I find, say, I always like to look at it. I have 16 gigs free on my phone. And I do have the 64 gig, so I use it.
let's see, where am I at right now?
So okay.
Just wait. Usage? Is it under usage?
Yes, it's under usage. General usage.
3.6 available. There you go.
And how many gigabytes do you have?
32.
Nice. 128 gigabit. No. It's more than that. It's 8 times that.
Yeah, whatever.
Doesn't matter. This is a stupid joke anyways. So basically... That's the big thing, and I think that's a lot of the reason why people are hearing stuff, because, you know, to be totally fair, the Samsung Galaxy S4 has some pretty cool features and hardware updates. It's got things like a 13-megapixel camera. Now, one of the things that I hope I realize that this is like, you know, from a specs battle, wow, it's got, you know, look how many more megapixels it has than the iPhone. The iPhone only has 8. And the thing is that actually, and that's such a big jump that probably will have a definable
noticeable
difference in
yeah.
quality, appreciable difference. The thing though is that, you know, when the iPhone 5 came out with their crazy lens and all their like sophisticated software and stuff, most tests showed that not only did they just crush every other 8-megapixel camera by performance, and I had a Samsung Galaxy S3, and the camera did not do very well. It wasn't a great camera. And like I've said before, you know, for a keyboard and a camera, that's all you want, go get a Nokia Lumia 920. They were fantastic. Some of the best that I've ever seen. Because... Mm-hmm. They put tons and tons of money in it. Whereas with Samsung, man, they make these chips, so they just go out and they just churn out as many of these little camera chips as they can, but they don't put, you know, like, they do everything at 90%, and that's what drives me nuts about the phone. Is it's like, they do whatever it takes to get that spec, and then they stop. They build a 13 gigabyte camera or 13 megapixel camera, and then they put a cheap lens in it because nobody cares about the lens until they realize the picture quality is not as good as your point and shoots. And there's no, it doesn't make any sense why a point and shoot camera should have a better picture than a Samsung Galaxy S4 at this point, but it will because they don't spend the time to develop the software and the hardware, the complete package. And the thing is it's just,
oh, that's because they're not. Inherently, they're not the software company, which is weird.
Yeah, that's
I'm sure you'll dive a little deeper into that.
They want to be
the hardware, which is also kind of weird, though. Dude, you're doing the hardware. Put the better lens in. That's what you should care about.
Yeah, well, exactly. And the thing is it's like, you know, you look at Nokia, and I come back. Nokia's it's unbelievable. Like I was actually stunned, I feel like. If you listen to this show by this point, you'll realize I am not the biggest fan of Samsung. I don't get that impressed by them. You know, they obviously have a great product. Their advertising campaign they're doing pretty well. They're entertaining. I'll give them credit for that. And which, you know, honestly, that's half of the reason why I like Apple. But the thing is that it's not a complete package, and the reason why that's a big deal is, well, okay, let's give you some of the stats. For the rest of the world, you don't get this if you're an American. You get like they have like an 8-core processor that has like this like weird balancing thing that it does that it never actually runs more than 4 cores at a time. but it's still a pretty impressive processor.
Impressive.
They've got it's got the super bright OLED screen. Like the screen actually sounds pretty nice. I'll bet it's pretty, but it's ginormous, and my fingers aren't that big. But a lot of people love that, so that'll be a good selling point for anybody that's not a girl, or has small stubby hands.
That's definitely a showstopper when you're
right.
Oh, yeah, when you're with friends, you go, here, check out this YouTube video that I saw.
Yeah, it's gigantic, and it's a stunning picture. Like, honestly, from a video-watching perspective, which is not, you know, that's not nothing. That's a significant part of these devices' lives. That's worth a lot. Like, I get that. I don't want to totally underplay that. It's got a barometer, which is really cool. It's got, a temperature sensor.
Oh, that is cool.
They've really been pushing forward on that. We're going to put as many sensors in it as possible, which I appreciate, and I think that's the sort of thing that Apple would do well to copy. You know, why does it need a barometer? I don't know. Why did it need an accelerometer? Because, you know, just put it in there. It costs you nothing, and it gives it, and maybe somebody will figure out what to do with it.
Didn't they say they also added a step counter to it?
Yeah. Which I don't actually get why they put in a discrete. Well, I don't think they put in a discrete chip. I think it's just the accelerometer connected to the pedometer, or it might be is a totalizer. Is that so? That it's not actually running. It's something that just keeps track of your total number of. You know, there might actually be a discrete chip connected to the accelerometer. But maybe a second accelerometer is so cheap. I don't know. Anyways. Doesn't matter. But the point is that there's all these cool new features in it, and legitimately, that's awesome. You know, and one of the things is, like, and I'm a big
advocate.
Do
they call the one where you hover, do they call that force touch? Are they allowed to do that?
I'm not sure.
Because that would be, you know, awesome if they licensed the name from Disney.
Yeah,
they
should.
We would like to call this force touch. Let me show you how it works.
Yeah, it's sort of this. Like using the force.
Or have you seen Phenomenon with John Travolta? It's kind of like that, what he does with a pencil. You can move back and forth, just put a slowly above.
Granted, like
he had a tumor, and, you know, that's bad, but we're just...
Granted, he had a tumor. Ours won't cause tumors, we think.
We're fairly certain. Of course, I've read, like you said, it works 90% of the time, which makes it frustrating 100% of the time.
Right. Well, just like your swipe to text thing, where it's like...
I love the idea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing with these guys. It's like it works most of the time, but it doesn't... anyways, and so one of the biggest problems that they're running into is, number one, this isn't the first phone or thermometer or thermometer. Or any of your other onometers, and you know, it's not like it's the first.
It's got an NFC in it, I'm guessing, and it's always
yeah, I believe so.
I don't know. I'm an iPhone user, so that's like still new and cool to me.
But what they're basically was saying was like the processor. It's not like it's better than every other processor out there. It's not like it's got every. It's not like it's got a bunch of sensors that aren't already out there. It's not like. But what they did do. Well, the screen's pretty fantastic. We'll give them credit for that. But what they did do is it was the first phone to put everything together into one package of like it's got all the cool sensors. It's got all the cool hardware updates. It is the. You know, quote unquote, the best Android out there right now. And you know, like, so you sit there and go, nice, nice, but it's only like the next like 10%. And if you're really following like the Android market, and when this is where the utterly boring comes in, they say, I don't know, it's kind of like the iPhone 5. They're like, that's it, made a little bit bigger. What? You know, they're like,
it's you know, it is genuinely awesome. But what was the word? They just said it's just not intriguing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's, you know, and that's exactly what this is it's, but what's interesting about it is because this is like
why
the first
they put
phone,
on a huge show.
Right. And it's, and this is the first phone that's really got, you know, the Samsung Galaxy S3 really shook up the market with the whole, well, it can, you know, they outsold the iPhone and, you know, the quarter before the iPhone 5 launched. And, you know, everybody was, you know, super stoked about that. And, you know, nice job, Samsung, which got them a lot of attention. And now this is the next one. This is the next iteration. And everybody's sitting there saying, you know, Apple really can't rest on the laurels anymore. They really got to step up their game, which is true. I mean, like, you know, especially in the iOS department, they've really got to step up their game because, you know, I you know, I sit there and I go, okay, the whole, like, you look away and the thing pauses. That's pretty cool. I'll be honest. That's a cool feature.
It might be cool. I just don't know how useful that really would be, but maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. And the, I do like the, or they, and they talked about how, like, the eyeball scrolling stuff. It's not exactly how it was described, which is good because it didn't really seem like it would work that well.
It's more like the tilt-a-scroll, right?
Right. Yeah. Which is kind of cool.
I've used, there was a Bible app, Blue Letter Bible app that has that on it. I think Instapaper also does it where you just kind of, you tilt it and it changes the scroll speed, which is cool.
Why not put that kind of stuff in there? They were really, really touting the translation app, and everybody was like, wow, man, iPhone's really far behind on that one. I'm sitting here going, dude, I've had Google Translate on my iPhone for the last 3 years. Like, go get an app, people. Jeez. Like, and the thing is like, it's literally the same thing with all the functionality. It's got a voice translator that sends the data to the Google server.
How often do you need something translated? I don't.
Well, if you're traveling a lot.
Maybe there. Okay. Well. All right. Fine. For travelers, get this phone. It'll be awesome.
But the point is, Google Translate is already on every phone. And guess what? It's got all the languages. Whether you have an iPhone or an Android phone, or they probably even have it for. They probably don't have it for Windows.
I don't trust Google. But, they could kill it in an instant. So I want to hedge my bets.
Seriously. But the thing is
I'm
going to
use
that
line for like a year.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're learning the hard way.
Come out with something
right?
awesome. Google Glass. I don't trust them. They could kill it in an instant.
Well, you know, it's a valid point, man. But the thing is with the iPhone, and I really do believe that, like, you know, or you know, so I this is, it's so crazy. They did such a good job, like, really playing up the different apps.
They played up what?
All the different features that it has, and like the translation one, and this is where it comes to. It's like, it's what they've done is they've made a very impressive phone. Like we've said, it's just not very intriguing. It's not a big leap forward. It doesn't change anything. It's probably going to outsell the iPhone this quarter. You know, that's the, you know, that or, you know, at least the lower end models like the 4S. But the reality of it is, and, you know, it really is, you know, they're getting close to Apple, or in a lot of areas they're better than Apple. So, it, you know, Apple can't rest on the laurels. But the thing is, you know, an Apple strategy right away is so funny because it's just such a classic Apple strategy. They're like, we don't care if they have better megapixels. We don't care if they have better, you know, bigger processors and all, more RAM. We've never cared about that kind of stuff. We're all about the end experience, and our overall experience with a better managed app store and and better hardware is an overall improvement. You know, it's not, you know, a phone isn't a list of specs. It's an experience, and it's how it fits, it integrates into your life, and we still do that way better than anybody else. So it's like Apple just staying on message, and that's
did you find it weird though that they felt compelled to come out and say something?
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was weird. Well, it was very not, well, I can't even say it's not Steve Jobs-esque, because Steve Jobs is really great at, like
even before an event?
Yeah, it was kind of out of character. I definitely think that Tim Cook is kind of in a little bit of a panic mode. Like, he definitely, you know, the stock price is really stressing him out. And, you know, there's this real drumbeat of negative media. And I think they're gearing up to go on the offensive and defensive with their advertising. And it's like, because, I mean, you know, think about it. Like, look at, you know, it's not like Apple's, you know, above attacking direct competitors. Look at the Apple versus Mac campaign, or the Mac, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac campaign. Like, you know, they're not above that sort of thing, and never have been. It just, the problem is that in the past they've been very creative.
Well, and those, they were a distant number two, so they can get away with it.
Right. Well, that is a big thing. But even when they weren't number two, they, you know, Steve Jobs made all sorts of digs during different announcements and stuff. Like,
it would be part of an Apple message, he would say. This was just, you know, specifically Phil Schiller coming out and being like, yeah, I'm going to grant some interviews and we're going to talk about how we're different and better. I don't know. It was just weird. It just felt like they were on the defensive.
They came off weak
as a result.
It was insane. I will say it's not their best performance, but the idea of them coming out on the defensive isn't stunning to me. What's frustrating is it doesn't have that Steve Jobs flair for style.
they will do it with the launch of a product. You know,
right.
So you've got something to talk about. You're talking about Apple anyways. You know, and it's just, this is going to sound weird, but they have gone a while without launching a product. And, you know, they need to do that again. Unfortunately for them, that's what gets people excited, not amazing sales.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's, you know, and the biggest problem
that
is
one year it was like every Tuesday they were launching something new.
Yeah, and it just keeps people talking. And now they've got everything launching together at the same time. So it's like, you talk about, you know, it's like they're on the fourth generation iPad. I can't believe how few people realize that they're already on the iPad 4. Like, they just don't even, because it's, you know, I understand why they did it, because it really helps with Christmas sales, but it really does hurt their overall image when they're not just kind of have that constant drumbeat of new products coming out. And that was the beauty of their launch cycle.
Probably really hard to do.
yeah, probably. And so I don't know. And yeah. It was an interesting article, you know, it was an interesting presentation. It's been really interesting hearing everybody's, like, reviews and hearing just the general populace's reaction to the phone. You know, and a lot of people have been asking me about it, because I'm something of an expert on technology and they want my opinion.
But you are. I shouldn't be laughing. It's true.
So my response in all of this has always been, it's a very good phone. And that's what I said about the Samsung Galaxy S3. It's a very good phone. I mean, if you like Android, go for it. Like, it's not like it's a bad phone. I don't like it. It's kind of quirky, but that doesn't mean it's a bad phone. And this one's the same thing. It's an iterative improvement. They fixed some of the things that weren't as good on the other ones. They've bumped up some of the specifications. If it's what you like, it's better than the next one. So why not get it? If you are already on a cycle to get a new phone, it's kind of like the iPhone 5 versus people who own the 4S are like, should I get the iPhone 5? Like, no, you're fine. It's, you know, it's better, but it's not like it's so much better. It's worth the extra money. Mm-hmm. Whereas people who are like on the 3GS, they're like, you know, should I get a new iPhone 5? Like, of course, it's a gigantic leap for you, but, you know, and this is what, that's what the Galaxy S4 is. It's another step. And, if you're into that sort of thing, you'll be very happy. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know why you'd be into that sort of thing, but, No, I'm just kidding. That was it. I mean, that was the big announcement. A lot of attention, and they're doing a great job marketing though right now. They're doing a fantastic job marketing. They got so much attention. Now I know exactly how all of the Apple haters felt with all this iPhone. It's not even that big of a deal. Why does everybody care? Guys, it's kind of a big deal. It's a new phone. It's nice. Why do you have to be all, but it's, you know, when you don't actually appreciate the product like everybody else, the hype is really annoying. Really exaggerates it. You know, the hype is really exaggerated. You really notice it.
Yeah.
You know, so your skin's already
similar thing like you're talking about with EA, right? You mess up, they're all over you. And this is if you go just a little too far, all over it.
Right. And it's, you know, and
they went, but it, yeah, which is impossible to do for this type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's working for them. They're, you know, and honestly, like, clearly HTC is in shambles. Motorola is interesting. I read an article about Motorola. I'm gonna kind of shift gears about like what happened to Motorola, and they basically said Motorola is an expert at making things thinner, smaller, and lighter, and that was what their entire modus operandi was for like a decade through the 90s. The early 2000s came out, and they came out with the idea of the flip phone, which are the color screen flip phone, which are these bulky phones, and Motorola. And what they didn't realize is that something changed at that point. They were suddenly going in a different direction, more features, better features. And what happened with Motorola was they came out with the Razr, which happened to be thinner, lighter, and smaller, but it also had a better camera and a better screen. And everybody loved it because it had a better camera and a better screen. But Motorola thought they loved it because it was thinner, smaller, lighter. And so when the smartphone revolution came out, they came out with the Droid Razr. They came out with the thinner, smaller, lighter. And they didn't focus on making it the best phone. And guess what? Nobody bought it.
Crazy.
But it's, you know,
it reminds me of, this is such a cool little insight. I learned about this in graduate school, actually, but it's about HP, so there you go. HP was going to come out with a new laptop, and they were trying to decide. All the research indicated that people liked their laptops thinner, lighter, and less expensive, I think.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, you know, they wanted the trifecta. And so HP had done all this research and was like, all right, we need to figure out how to get these things thinner so that people can enjoy them. And so they did this focus group, and so this was a marketing class, so we were watching the focus group. And they started them off saying, okay, we've made these products, tell us what you think. We've made these thinner and we did them by different ways. Like in one of them, they got rid of the CD drive. In one of them, they literally got rid of the speakers. And some of them, they had smaller amounts of memory. May not have been a CD drive. It might have been a floppy drive at the time. It was around that time, you know?
Yeah.
And so they were like, you know, which one do you like more? What do you like about the size? What do you like about the weight? And, you know, and really, they were really focusing. I mean, this was like a 2-hour video focus group type of thing and we got to watch this entire progression of this group, right?
Yeah.
And the group was like, oh, yeah, I would really like something that's thinner and lighter. That sounds awesome. Yeah, bring it. I would totally love to use something like that. And because they started it off with their whole question, would you like something thinner and lighter? Oh, yeah. And then they said, well, we have a couple prototypes. We'd like to show them to you and, you know, see what you think. And so they're playing with this group. I mean, we're like an hour into this thing. And the whole entire drumbeat has just been, we want it thinner and lighter. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, and get the cost down as low as you can, whatever. And that was the entire drumbeat of this entire hour-long thing. And you were like, all right, dude, this is what they want. Now we're just trying to figure out what can we get rid of in order to make this happen. And then they started going with the prototypes. Like I said, this is like an hour in, okay?
Yeah.
And they go, okay, well, what about this one? They go, well, where's the CD drive? And they're like, oh, well, it doesn't come with one. If you wanted a CD drive, you'd have to have an external one, and you just plug it in this USB port right here. And they were like, well, so I have to carry around a CD drive with me? Like, well, yeah, you know, if you wanted one, but the computer's thinner. They're like, well, that's dumb. Why don't you just put it in the computer so that I have it?
Like, yeah,
but that would make it fatter and heavier. It's the exact opposite of what you just told us. They went, and they go, yeah, I know, but I want to have my CD drive, and I don't want to have to carry around a peripheral. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. And then they were like, where are the speakers on this thing? Like, oh, well, it doesn't have any, because if we get rid of the speakers, we can save space. Like, well, how do I listen to music? Like, oh, well, there's a headphone jack, so you plug it in, you got your earphones, so you could use it. And they're like, yeah, but what if I have friends over? How do I share a video with them? How do they hear it? And they're like, oh, well, you could get a splitter, I guess, but you wouldn't be able to do that. And they're like, why would I buy this? This is dumb. and literally, so this whole hour, right, of like thinner and lighter, and then it was like in like this 10-minute time period, made a complete 180 to, no, add all the features and make this a complete machine, and I don't care about the actual weight and size. I care about the features and what I can do on this. Just make it the best CD drive. Give me the best speakers. Give me the biggest hard drive, and I will figure out how to lug this thing around.
Right, which is really what makes the – let's be honest. That's really what makes the MacBook Air so incredibly unique, in that that's exactly what Apple did and yet somehow convinced people that – they were better off that way.
Well, part of it was a timing issue, right? And yeah. HP has always struggled with being like 5 to 10 years ahead of the curve, which is a problem. Oftentimes they're on the right track, they kill them a little bit too early instead of really letting it digest and sit there and iterating on it until they have something. Because HP kind of works on it's like a 3 to 4 year cycle. And for some of these things, it's like, no, we really need to, the first version needs to be like a 10-year deal. Especially if we get feedback right away that it's bad, that means don't kill it. That means wait a little bit and refine it so that when the time's right, we strike. And, but yeah, so all of that to say, the whole point of me sharing that story, besides the fact that it's just a very fun story, is if you walk into something and you think it's one way, it's so easy to kind of guide that conversation, right? If they had come and just kind of open book, tell us about what's important with your laptops, they never would have gone down this, this one strategy, which the big thing is always, well, like, engineers want to make things thinner and lighter and, add features which may or may not be important. And, it's all about what the customer thinks, which is, whatever. That's one argument. But Motorola clearly got locked into that trap where they misdiagnosed it. And my guess is that on every single research they did, they didn't get 2 hours. They didn't get an hour into a 2-hour focus group to really allow people to change their minds.
Yeah.
And to tell them what they really think. My guess, especially with this, especially with phones and when Apple leads the crowd and is all about secrecy, you're much less apt to share what you're doing with people and try to get their feedback before you actually make it. And yeah, it's just very interesting that they got themselves caught.
Yeah.
We made it thinner and lighter. It's what you wanted. Actually.
Right. Well, that's, and I mean,
features.
Yeah, which is obviously what Samsung has figured out, and that's a huge selling point for their devices.
Exactly,
they've got a ridiculous number of speakers
that barely fits in your pocket. It does everything I want. We'll worry about lightness later.
And we say, and the thing is that it is lighter and thinner than the old ones. It's not like it's a brick of a phone. It happens to be a cookie sheet of a phone, but which was a jab at its size. but
single cookie sheet, maybe.
Exactly. But it's, it's, I don't know. But that's where we are at. And I think Google or I think Apple, would be helped if they were to add a few more features for people to play with, a few more API for developers to pull on. A barometer seems ridiculous, but it's like there are so many pedometer apps out there. Why not build a pedometer that's constantly running in the background that any app can pull with a single API? Why not put that chip in there? What's holding you back, Apple? And, I think if they were to do that sort of thing,
that's because it's not going to be in the phone. You know where it's going to be, right?
Yeah, it's going to be in the watch. Oh, it'll, baby.
It'll be about time to add these different sensors.
Yeah.
The phone will just manage it.
Yeah. So, about that time to move on. I want to, because there's other stuff going on. So, basically, Facebook isn't cool anymore. Did you know that?
I felt it, but I didn't know it for sure.
Yeah. So, younger users. So this is the I wrote this on.
You wrote it
a little while ago. I didn't write this article, but I read an article and the synopsis that I wrote. I'm just gonna read to you. Younger users don't like Facebook anymore. The resounding complaint is about timeline and the presence of stuff you just don't care about. They're looking. For something more like Instagram. Many people have explained that it's Facebook is like email nowadays. And what's fascinating about that sentence is it's super loaded because email is like, you can't get rid of email. Like, what the heck? It's one of the most important online tools that we have. And, you know, there are a bunch of different competing services and people are constantly jockeying for it. But it's one of the central tools. It's incredibly important and really boring. Mostly it's stuff that you hate to deal with. You know, it's work, it's bills. It's, you know, as an adult, it's like not very, or it's got a few fun things in there, but that's not why you do it, you know, for fun anymore. You don't chat with friends for fun on email. You use your text messages. When I get really excited about some girl I'm hanging out with, we're not emailing each other. and people aren't Facebooking anymore either. We talked about this last week, this idea that the new design of the timelines, the biggest thing that they have to do is figure out an algorithm that doesn't bore me to tears.
Well, there you go. Let's just put that one out there.
Yeah.
Basically, just fix your core product and we'll be good.
Yes, exactly. but that's the complaint that everybody's getting. And the big thing about it is
laugh too hard. We hear that about HP. If you just lower the price on your ink, we'll be fine. Whoa. Turns out what?
Yeah.
What if we don't do that? What else could we do?
Yeah. Let's say that was not on the table as an option.
Then what?
Yeah.
Oh, I just won't print. Okay. What if?
let's get creative here, people.
funny if it's not your job.
So with Facebook, what's really fascinating about this is that this is starting to become a drum beat, and it's really kind of becoming a problem for Facebook, especially with the younger crowd, is that, you know, your parents and constantly the fact that, like, I hate political posts. I don't get any political posts on my Facebook timeline, which I really appreciate because I hate everybody. I'm the only one that's right. And I think it's because, like, I never.
So then you hate it when I reply to our dad's emails? You're just stop, James. I don't want to hear this political babble.
No. I mean, I actually read those, but it's because it's family and stuff. You know, I mean, obviously I don't reply to them at all because it's not that I'm not reading them or not paying attention. It's just not, you know, if I'm going to talk politics, I talk politics in, you know, I talk politics, but I do it face to face. And it's not that I don't like, but I actually really like politics, which is part of the problem I hate Facebook politics because it's like, you people are so crazy.
Well, they're mini soapboxes. They're not a conversation.
Yes,
you want a conversation.
And most people have really, really dumb opinions.
dumb, just either very biased or misinformed.
Yeah. And...
So we gotta join a politics page. Then you'll.
Yeah, that's what I really want. No, you see, the problem is like even for parties that I really agree with their policies and stuff, when I talk to people of the same party, I hate their politics. Like, why would you think you agree with me and I hate the reasons why you agree with me?
Okay, all right. So here's what I want to know. Okay. We're not gonna reveal anything. On a scale of 1 to 10. Think of these as percentages, I suppose. 100% to 0%, okay? Yeah. Like, how close are you to agreeing with some of the stuff that I spout on emails? Just percentage? I just want to know. Just curious.
I'd say pretty high up there. Pretty high up there. I actually
90s? 90s? 80s?
It depends on the topic, but I'd give it between 80 and 90%.
All right.
I find that you and I are on the same page in a lot of, but it tends to be because we're both kind of bitter about the whole thing.
Ah. I said we're not giving anything away.
that's right. Shoot. anyways,
yes.
So yeah, this is awesome because that's like what do you guys not want to hear about on Facebook? Politics. So what do we do? Talk about it on the show. we're moving on from that. But the problem is, and the thing is that people don't like, it's not, it's, and this is really becoming an epidemic for younger users. It's really affecting residence time, not just usage, because that's, I mean,
you
one
said
of the most
residence
important-
time?
Resonance. How long you resonate on the page, how long you use it for.
That's
Facebook's like got three key metrics. They've got total users, monthly users, and resonance time.
Okay.
They can break
that
up
over
demographics.
Well, I was reading too that some teens didn't like visiting because they knew that if they went to the site, they'd get sucked in and spend too much time, and so they would actively try to avoid it because, you know, their time is valuable.
That seems really, really common, especially amongst like your college students. I've noticed I have a lot of college age friends, especially male guys, that will like periodically, I'm not using Facebook anymore, and you're like, so, or I'm deleting my Facebook account because I've got better uses of my time. Like, you're deleting your Facebook account because you're ridiculous. But like, why not just like not use it for, you know, have some self-control?
It's rough.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't like people knowing everything about me. You're like, change your security preferences. Like, what? Or your privacy? Whatever.
Fixes other than your screen.
Right.
Delete.
Right.
Google. Well,
yeah, exactly. Well played.
That's right.
I think I know what the title of this show is going to be about.
Knew the title before we even started.
That's true.
Come
that's
on.
That's true. That
or
is
the
very
topic,
true.
At least.
Subscribe
to this week's episode. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Actually, no. RSS isn't dead. Just the way that you were actually able to consume it. Which iTunes isn't killing RSS, so we're fine.
That's true. So I know we usually talk about this after the show, but I definitely think the title should be Google Ruins Everything.
Google Ruins Everything. Consider it.
I don't know. It's an interesting, you know, this is
interesting.
Huge...
Google ruins my life, but maybe.
Google ruins all that is good in the world. this Facebook isn't cool thing anymore. It's an interesting dilemma because they've definitely become a utility. This is the way people
do they care?
I don't. Well, I think they care about residence time. I know that's one of their key metrics and it affects it. I think especially since it's such a powerful tool as you get older, you know, it's fascinating if it becomes like it started as something for college students, then it became something for high schooler and middle schoolers, and then it became something for adults. And it'd be interesting if it just kind of swings back to the point where like, you don't really get it until you're like in college. But the clear point here, I think, and just the way everybody, or my observation, and this hasn't been in an article or anything, so this is like just for new listeners. This is special, exclusive insight.
Yeah, I got
into
a theory
the
too.
World of tech.
So let me hear yours.
I think what's happened just from what I've been hearing is it's become a utility, and which is really what Facebook wanted because that's the only way to stick. Email is sticky because it's a utility. People use it for something. It's managing your online social network, which doesn't sound like something that's, you know, it's not like email where you use it for work. But my personal email I don't use for work, and yet I use it a ton. And, you know.
Yeah, well, I see it. I agree with you in a utility in the sense that it will manage your friends list and it can manage some of your login for sites. But I think the real issue they're going to run into is they'll have the whole world signed up for Facebook and very few people will actually be visiting their page and they won't be able to monetize on it. Which
Google,
maybe they don't
Google
need
can tell them how that feels.
On it, but they're going to, you know, which. I don't know. I feel like until they go to in-stream, I don't know. That's, you know what I mean? I feel like that's going to be a big, that could be a big issue for them where, teens and kids are signing up for it, but they're just not visiting, not interacting because they're doing things on other services that happen to connect to Facebook.
Well, except the thing is that if they ad net. You see, this is the thing. If they become an ad network, which they are, they're building ad networks, and they have separate services, and they buy Instagrams, and they buy this, and they do that, and they basically do what Google's done, where you know, if it becomes Google, if the Facebook main page becomes, or your timeline becomes essentially Google Plus, that's not a terrible place to be as long as you have all these other, you know, places to put your advertising. What Facebook likes is that they've got this crazy popular core product. But the core product really and truly is the users. You know, so it's just like Google. The core product isn't Google search. It's the user base, because the user base is what, you know, is what advertisers pay for. That's where the money comes from. And I think they'll be all right. It just will mean that the company is a change, and I think it will hurt them some if they can't really dial in a way to make timeline interesting. Part of the problem is you need interesting friends if you're going to have an interesting time.
So this ties in pretty well to this. Okay, one way that they could solve the problem is with a new rumor that Facebook is going to introduce, or maybe a better way to say it is actually like use hashtags. So if anyone has ever used Twitter, you know what a hashtag is. It's a way of tagging your post by putting a hash in front of the word. You know, and it's useful for a couple reasons. Number one, it allows you to make a commentary, and then without having to explain it, you just add a tag, and that in like one or two words can explain what it is that you're referencing or talking about. Which is, you know, convenient. Another really convenient thing is, like, say during the Super Bowl, you can put a tag for Super Bowl, and that way people know, oh, he's referring to the Super Bowl or a show or a concert or event or whatever. Really nice. And if you tap on that tag, it brings up essentially a search for everyone else who is using that same tag. So if there's like a conference like South by Southwest, everyone who does something there can tag it, and then you can see all the different South by Southwest tags going on, which PS did happen in the week. We just ignored it.
Things were going on that were more important.
Yeah, like Google Reader dying. But anyways, Facebook is thinking about getting into this too, because one of the cool things about it is, again, you can then sell ad placements to topics and specific tagged topics. You know, if someone tags food or delicious or whatever, somebody, they had an example. I don't remember. So we could just make one up, right? If someone types in like a new computer let's say a new computer, and they tag it with that, and they're like, oh, I love my new hardware, hashtag new computer. That sounds so dumb, but we'll go with it. HP could buy that hashtag and then say, hey, get a new printer to go with your new computer.
I'm not.
Click this ad link. Like I said, that was a bad one. But you know, but it could be like NFL buys hashtags for both teams. Okay, and so as people tag, like, say, 49ers, they could say, hey, get some 49ers swag. And, you know, and so because they know you're probably going to be a fan if you're tagging them, hey, buy this Super Bowl thingy, stuff like that. So you can – so it opens up another way for Twitter – not Twitter. See, this is a problem. For Facebook to become interesting, because you're no longer stuck to just your friends – you can now subscribe to different topics and ideas and hashtags, essentially. And it's a way of creating your own personal topic page that includes everybody who does either a public post or a friend post that you, I guess, are able to see. You know, they'll figure out the thing.
I just had the most brilliant thought I've ever had about Facebook. Like, I figured out what the problem is. I actually figured out what the problem is.
Well,
I just did that.
Share it. Or?
I don't have interesting friends.
Oh, boom. Hopefully they don't listen to this. Wait, I'm your friend.
Well, I know. Well, yeah, this. But my point is, I mean, or maybe I do, but I'm operating under the assumption that I have interesting friends. And so Facebook is doing a poor job of giving me the interesting posts, right?
They call that the interest graph. They have your friend graph, but not necessarily your interest graph.
Right. And I wonder if one of the biggest problems that the Facebook timeline has is that I have, you know, I've got a lot of friends. I'm very popular.
And
I, you know,
do you got more than me? Do you have more than me?
Oh yeah, tremendously.
Really?
How many do you have?
I don't know. How many do you have?
I have like 800.
Right, oh yeah, you have more than me.
Do I make sure I have more friends than everybody?
I make sure I am the most. Oh, I'm not bad. I'm 441. But you are double.
That's not bad. That is not bad.
But you are double.
Oh yeah.
What? What are you at?
Oh, it's only 679.
Ah, whatever. Quit your showboating. The problem is that I don't even know how to get beyond you.
Yeah.
Besides going out there into the real world and actually meeting people.
What? That sounds terrible.
I'm not about to do that. But, come on. I got to find a reader replacement so I can stay in my cave.
But think about it this way. Like, and I realize that this is what Dig tried to do and everybody rejected it wholeheartedly. But what if instead of saying, hey, these are people you might know, what if they were to introduce a feature that, hey, these are people who are interesting?
Well, that's what Twitter does. They go, these are people you might find interesting.
Right. Right. Exactly. What? And why doesn't Facebook do that?
They probably will eventually.
You see, I think you should.
Well, because their whole thing is they're trying to emphasize friends, right? And that's all that social graph, your friends. And I think that they are slowly going to get into interest. And I think hashtags will be what gets them there. And we're just talking over each other, which is awesome.
I'm sorry. I heard what you said. I wonder why. Oh, man.
So how do you get more interesting friends?
Facebook's supposed to tell me who's interesting, and then I will go, like, you know, and even if it's just likes, okay, I mean, there's got to be a way, right? Because, I mean, like, if you know what I like, what things I like, what I thumbs up, oh, man, and you know what other people thumbs up, and if you, like, if you were to have content that were to move kind of up, or even if it were, like, every 10th front page article, see, all of a sudden I'm thinking Reddit, but if you were to have, like, every 10th timeline article or, you know, component, update, whatever, be somebody that I don't know, or like have that be like a switch that you could say, would you like us to add interesting things that aren't shared by your friends? You know, and just sort of a, and if you like it, this will start to integrate these things in, and based on what you like and who you like, we'll start to introduce in the friends of these are interesting people, and we'll give you, like, it would be nice to be able to follow somebody kind of like in a I don't want to be friends with you yet, but I'd like to see a couple of your posts to see if you come up with interesting stuff, because, like, they're people. It's exactly like Twitter. It's precisely like Twitter. Why don't they do that? Oh, this is driving me nuts. Why don't I work for Facebook? I can fix everything for them.
as long as it's mechanically inclined.
I'm gonna say we're gonna start an RSS feeder. we're gonna do all sorts of cool stuff.
It's gonna be amazing for
the Facebook.
That's funny.
Cool. So the last thing I want to talk about today,
and then I got one more.
I just want to cover the fact that graphene is officially the carbon nanotubes of 2013.
Mm.
So last couple of years have been carbon nanotubes and all the cool things that, like, you know, the, like, hyper efficient electrical transfer and super strong and everything. And then nobody figured out how to manufacture it at scale, which makes it pretty useless. So they're still working on that, but graphene, what is graphene? Graphene is essentially a single molecule thick sheet of carbon. It's similar to graphite in that graphite it's a
we talked about this last week, didn't we? Because I thought it had to do with charts.
Yes, yes, we did. We did talk about graphing last week. You're right, and this is the thing is that it's like it's becoming more and more because you know what graphing was used for? It was used for supercapacitors. That's what that whole like
yes.
that graphing was the cool new thing that they were doing with that. Well, they're doing even more now. Graphing is being used in like audio speakers, and they're finding that like the audio response on it is just fantastic.
Cool.
It's unbelievably good. So they're like, wow, these are really cool speakers. But the other big one that they're talking about is desalinating water with carbon or with graphene. And
that's what normally you do with carbon filters. Well, normally it's just a regular filter. It's not for salt.
No. Yeah, because basically what you need to do is you need to make the holes on this thing small, big enough to let water molecules through, but too small to let salt molecules through. So we're talking very small holes.
Yeah.
And traditionally how desalination plants work is that's exactly what it is. They're giant filters that make like these tubes of filters that have tiny, tiny little holes and these filters are super thin. So that the molecules can work their way through it. And then they just super pressurize the water, and the water basically just leaches through this stuff. And as it comes through, it comes out with more water. It's reverse osmosis is the correct term, chemical term, for pushing the desalinated water through. And it's all like super clean and stuff. It's a very cool process. But it's really, really expensive because it requires so much pressure for such a sustained period of time. That it's enormously expensive. It's one of the most expensive ways to clean water. But if you could do it, you basically would solve any water problems that we have because we've got an unbelievable amount of salt water on the planet and just not quite enough fresh water.
We do have a little bit of that.
Yeah, and so if we could just like plug one of these into the ocean, that'd be really great. Well, Lockheed Martin, which makes this more legit, has been working with this new technology, and they are expecting to be manufacturing it at scale in 2 years, which is kind of crazy, because that's not one of those like we'll do it in 5 years. Like no, we're talking like we have an actual timeline to be able to do this. And essentially, what they're saying is because we're able to get graphene as a single sheet of molecules with the holes punched in them at the right size, it requires about 100 times less pressure to desalinate the water. So it's 100 times more efficient. Yeah, it's crazy efficient compared to these other ways of doing it. And what they basically said, it was like if you were to make graphene and blow it up to the size, so it was the size of a thickness of a piece of paper, the next thinnest filter would be the equivalent of 3 reams of paper, which is about a foot and a half. So, I mean, it's just insane how much, you know, how much thinner these things are, and they're incredibly strong. So they're able to take the pressure, and so you can push water through and desalinate for the first time, which is very exciting. So hopefully, this big war that everybody was expecting to happen over water as the, you know, in the next 20 years will be completely avoided because we, figured out, we cracked the code on this one. And the big thing with graphene, just like carbon nanotubes is can you manufacture it at scale? But that's one of the most exciting parts about it. And like with those supercapacitor things, people, I guess, have known for a long time that graphene is, well, not necessarily a long time, but it's not necessarily revolutionary to think that graphene can work as a supercapacitor. But the big deal, one of their biggest innovations in that whole thing was how they manufactured it. They did it really, really cheaply, and they could do it on a large scale. And so this one might actually change stuff, which would be pretty cool. It's a good time to be alive, but definitely this year has been the year of graphene. I don't know if, you know, it's the new wonder material.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
2011 was like the year of liquid metal. 2007 was the year of Gorilla Glass. 2012 was carbon nanotubes. It's awesome. But, all right, that's all I had to say about that.
That's awesome. Graphene.
Yeah.
Should become an expert in that.
I kind of am.
Done.
I actually, it's funny. I don't. Not many people know this, but I'd like to go back to grad school at some point. Okay, a lot of people know that, but nobody who listens. Probably not very many people who listen to the show. But the
big, I didn't know.
It's
that.
Always. I'd like to go back to grad school at one time because I want to be a doctor. It has nothing to do with what I want to learn. I
mean, there's a doctorate, or you want to be a doctor, like an MD.
I want to be Dr. Furlough in robotics, not an MD.
My name
when I write is MD Furlough, which so I already kind of have the medical doctor thing going on. I'd like a doctorate in philosophy. In the area, but the
philosophy.
All engineering PhDs are philosophy degrees.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Well, that's what PhD stands for. Philosophy doctor.
I knew that. Just testing you.
Exactly. Anyways, what was I going to say?
I don't know.
The two things I've always wanted to go back for was robotics, because robots are really cool. But the other one, because I just find it fascinating, is actually material study, and because I think because it's man, I love material stuff. It's so weird. I don't understand, but it's like it's all the lattices and chemical compositions, and I don't know why, but like
that is weird.
It is weird. It's dude. I studied so little for that class. I actually walked into one of the tests. I had friends that studied for this. Like I brag about this story all the time. I had friends that studied for like 3 days, like put in 20 hours in 3 days of studying just for this one test. I studied for 30 minutes before I walked into the room and set the high score on for the class.
So you have a natural ability there.
It was pretty awesome, and I was really good friends with the teacher because I was, like, just kind of a natural at the whole thing. And it was because for whatever reason, I could visualize what was going on. Like, it made sense in my, like...
You didn't have to memorize. You just had to work through how it works.
Exactly.
That makes a difference.
Yeah. And I'm
proud to say that I was like that with accounting, okay?
Oh, baby.
I didn't memorize it. I just understood it.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
But every single business person who's listening to this just hates me.
Vomited. Yeah. That's all right.
Usually that's the cut class. You know, it's like that's the class that schools use to cut people out of their program, which we have relatives who did not pass that class the first time or second time through it.
Sometimes.
And I was like you, where I was like, this just makes sense. Why are you memorizing this? Just think through it. Like, it doesn't make sense at all. Like, no. It's just arithmetic with labels. Why is this hard?
I totally get it.
Apparently it's hard. I don't know.
They used to send, for the engineering management degrees at my school, they made them take accounting, and they'd make them take accounting with the business students, and the engineers would always just like, they'd get out of the class and just be like, I can't believe how dumb some of those people are. You're like, no, they're not dumb, they're smart in their own way. But it's like, you give somebody with like a little bit of a math knowledge, and they're like, dude, accounting is easy. Which... I don't know. I never took it. I might have it more difficulty with it than I'd want to admit. But I was good with material science. I find it fun. So that's why like to bring all our material stuff, because
you would probably,
I think it's interessante.
You'd probably have fun with that. Or be totally bored, one of the two.
Yeah. No. You know the best part about it is there's so many new materials all the time. It's like super easy to become the world's expert in whatever, because it's like you can become in a matter of like a week the leading expert of, I kid you not, of flange fittings for built out of polyethylene. Flange fittings made of polyethylene and their structural response to stuff, because nobody's ever studied it before. Like, You can't do that with concrete because everybody studied everything about concrete. So it's like the most boring material out there. But we literally invent new materials on like a monthly basis, with whether it's like plastic and when you make a new material, like you're usually making.
Yeah, but the trick is to figure out which one's important. Like concrete is an important one.
Right.
Your flangey stuff, maybe not.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, you can become the leading expert on like 17 different topics, and it's sort of like you become an expert on like a bunch of different stuff. So you can kind of get your name out there, and eventually you get, it's all useless. Nobody uses it, but it just gets your name up. You know, it like makes you a hotter. So you're like, dude, he's an expert on 17 different material structures. It's crazy. And then when the big one comes along, and they're like, wow, we need somebody to be an expert on graphene. You're like, what's up? That's me. I'm already an expert on graphite and grappling and graminine and graminite and all the other grams. So I'm ready.
All right. Very cool. Before we call it quits,
okay.
I got one more genuinely quick one. Okay.
Okay.
It'll be quick on my part. We'll see if you
can interrupt.
Netflix has announced that they're bringing back social sharing. Before they could do this, actually, like share on Facebook and stuff, apparently there's a law that was put in place that said they couldn't. And so they had to get this law changed. Now that it's changed, they can bring back social sharing. Basically what it means is they'll have like two different new panels, I guess. I forget what those are called. Sections. I guess where you have like here what your friends' favorites are, which is based off of ones that they have rated very high. Then they'll also have like recently watched by your friends, which yeah. Again, they're going to use Facebook to kind of pull in who your friends are. And I think there'll be a way for you to, I can't remember now, to publish out if you see a good one. Oh, I like this one. Share it. But at the very least, you'll rate stuff and it will just, it can only be on Netflix. So you don't have to go to Facebook. That's not, you know, they're not going to push you to do it.
Good.
But yeah, you can share to Facebook or stop sharing altogether. That's right. But at the very least, you will see what your friends are enjoying. And I think you can, on an individual movie level, you can say, do not share my rating or the fact that I even watched this.
Yeah, that's probably
my
good.
Friends. Yeah, so they'll be rolling it out sometime.
I watch some stupid movies sometimes.
The end of this week is when it'll be happening. So,
okay, that's important. I'll have to pay attention to making sure that people don't know what movies I like.
Well, I think you got to connect to Facebook first, which you'll probably be prompted, in which case then you'll know.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, Netflix, getting a little social.
Hey,
it's good for them. Add some, and because they're doing the social with those two different rows, it'll be showing up on all of the different devices that they have because it's, you know, it'll just be integrated. It'll just be like two other categories, just like what they currently have. So, cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I like it. Netflix, keep iterating. Keep finding ways to find cool movies for people. And I say people, not us, because as we all know, I no longer participate, which I will admit, there are times when I miss it. We were looking through, we were waiting for a movie to download last night on iTunes, Looper, by the way. And
oh, man.
So we were going through and just watching some trailers. And there was, I forget what the movie was, but I was like, if this were on Netflix and free, I would watch it. But I'm not about to pay $3 to watch this movie.
Yeah, I understand that.
So I was like, on Netflix, I'd watch this, but oh well.
Oh, Netflix is kicking themselves.
I did see Looper. Threw me for a loop.
It's pretty good.
It's.
Don't ruin it. I borrowed it from the internet the other weekend, so I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, I give it an 8 out of 10. Is that
nice.
A good score?
That is a good score. That's a pretty good score. What would you give Top Gun?
That's easily an 11 out of 10.
Nice. What would you give Star Wars Episode 1?
So let me hear. Maybe this will help. I really, really, really like Ocean's 11.
Okay.
Which has no time travel, but, you know.
Is it as good as
with your mind?
Is it as good as any of the Back to the Futures? It's okay to say no. because those are some of the best movies ever made.
I know. Well, I'm just will be made. It's, you know how sometimes you have this idea and you go, oh, wouldn't that be cool if?
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about how the mechanics of the world would have to work that you just created a scenario in.
Yes, I know.
And sometimes the mechanics of how time travel works, like, destroys a storyline. So you have a choice. You either change the storyline or you change the way the mechanics of the world works.
Yes.
I think every single time travel movie suffers from that.
Yes.
And I think Back to the Future covered it up with hilarious humor.
Yeah.
This is a serious movie. Let's just put it that way.
Well, one of the most interesting things that I ever read was, so this is like so far off topic, but it was Orson Scott Card wrote a, he was writing an essay, actually it was part of like this huge compilation of short stories, but he wrote a short essay on time travel and his opinion on it, and because it's a big part of science fiction.
Yeah.
And his comment was, really and truly, there's no such thing as good science. There's no such thing as good time travel, because time travel is not real. I mean, like, even the best physicists can't agree on what it would be like if it actually exists, or generally, really, I don't expect to ever figure it out. So there's no, like, there's no way to...
Dude, you're breaking up like crazy.
Okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can for some reason.
Okay. Cool. So basically what his argument was is that when you make a science fiction about it, you actually have to get a little bit fantastic about it. Don't give it sci-fi rules. Give it fantasy rules and set it in a sci-fi universe. Because what you need, he goes, because there's no reason, he goes, that's part of the creative process. Don't act like there's only one time travel mechanism, because there's not. There's no good one. So just make up one that makes an interesting story. The story comes first, and the science fiction, you know, the science comes second, and focus on, and it just has to be that way.
So yeah, that makes sense. And I guess
seeing this movie didn't do a great job of that.
Well, you watch it and you tell me. And I will also, I guess, another way to put it, because I haven't seen every single time travel movie, but I would say, and this gets to your fantasy comment, the best implementation, I guess, that I've seen of it, would be the Harry Potter movie, and maybe the book, but you know where...
It's really funny, because everybody I talk to thinks that that was like the worst implementation of time travel.
Well, in the sense... Really? Well, yeah. I think in the sense that the timeline is consistent.
It's funny. I like it. I actually like it because exactly what Orson Scott Card said. It with a mechanism that made for a good story, and they just kind of pushed it to the sidelines. That it doesn't need to make sense. Why does it need to make sense? Just to, you know. And,
right. Well, and thankfully, Harry Potter, it's already in a fantastical universe where magic exists, and so therefore, right. don't worry about it.
And the problem becomes when you try to put rules to it. You're like, the rules don't make sense. They never make sense.
Which is the problem that this movie is not a fantasy movie. It's very much sci-fi, and so it. You know, it struggles with that. It's still enjoyable. You will like it. I'm not going to say it's not a bad movie. Like I said, it's an 8 out of 10. But it also, and it's, you know, the other thing that I would say Back to the Future also does a good job of is it makes it so complicated that you have to spend years trying to figure it out and untangle it. And so some of the stuff, they get away with stuff because it's so complicated, you just take it on faith that they figured it all out. You know, when chances are they didn't. Whereas you get movies like this one, it's not complicated. And so in the middle of the movie, you can figure it out. And you can instantly start to poke holes in how this would work or wouldn't work, I guess. It's still a very interesting, supposable, what if situation. It's worth watching. You don't, and it's not like ridiculously predictable, which is also nice. Because I will say, because I have a tendency to try to guess the ending in my head, and I pick like I was wrong like three times.
Nice.
So So that's also, you know, in that sense, I like that. When a movie gets predictable, I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I watch it. I already know it. So, yeah. Anyways, total off topic, but that's okay.
Yeah, that was good.
On that note, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. We will talk next time. Just keep this in your mind. $100 million.